the time to start dating after a divorce or after being single, whatever, after a breakup, or is when you realize rejection is a lot less personal. That dating implies you're going to have to say no to people, and you're going to have, it's not going to work out, because the apps are an inorganic amount of people in one day that you're meeting that find you attractive or mutual attraction.
Hey, hey, welcome to the WTF Divorce Podcast. My name is Rob Roseman. On this show, we talk about everything divorce, whether you're thinking about divorce, going through it, or figuring out life after. Divorce, co-parenting, dating. We cover it all and break it into short clips so it's easy for you to find and learn from. If you want more help, head on over to WTFdivorce.com. Thanks for listening. On to today's show. Real quick, let's talk about the sponsor. Today's WTF Divorce episode is brought to you by SoberLink. If you're going through a divorce and custody case involving alcohol, SoberLink is the solution for you. More on SoberLink at the end of the show. Now, on to today's episode. All right, welcome to the WTF Divorce Podcast. Today, we are lucky to be joined by Sabrina Zohar. Sabrina is a dating coach, and she is the host of the Do the Work podcast. Thanks for being here today, Sabrina.
Thanks, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's funny, like the magic of the serendipity of Instagram. I had never even heard of your work. And then all of a sudden people keep sending me your clips and say, she's really good. And I'm like consuming it and I'm learning. And here we are.
Sweet. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. And likewise, when I saw yours, I was like, yay, I love it. Finally, someone that's helping and speaking out as a man. So I appreciate you doing what you're doing.
Thank you. We need more men and we need more people saying what the fuck, because that's pretty much the general consensus of everything today.
I couldn't agree more.
So real quick, how did you get into, how do you become a dating coach? What's your background? What's this journey like for you?
So it's funny. My background is very colorful. So I went to school, when I was in school, I minored in psychology and I majored in business. And I was always interested in human psychology and the understanding of it, but I didn't know how I wanted to utilize the knowledge that I was learning. And I just thought, cool for me to know. Then I went through 10 plus 12 years total of living in New York, dating, having terrible experiences, learning a lot and starting therapy and really starting to study like, wait a minute. Okay. I can't be the only one that has such high anxiety that I literally can't function through my day. And it just really stemmed from a, oh, there's something wrong with me. I must be crazy. Oh, I'm damaged. I'm fucked. I'm broken. All of those things. And so I really dove into therapy, into my self-work and my healing and, you know, reading everything and understanding it and taking courses and really just diving in. And so I have a clothing company called Software. And while I was doing software, I was doing panels and podcasts and putting myself out there. And people were asking me to coach them just in life and business and things like that, of how I was able to do what I was able to do. And I always noticed it always would revolve around dating. I would always use the same, hey, you know, this also has to do with like in relationships. And I started to realize the synapses and how this was all connecting. And it was just serendipitous to talk about that. Like one day I just said, you know what, I might as well post on TikTok and see if there's other people that share with the struggles and what I've been through. And it just mushroomed from that. And it was really just organic. I had a private practice of just taking clients from just word of mouth and doing that. And then I said, you know what, okay, I'll put myself out there more as to really help with dating, the podcast, all of that. And it just mushroomed into here we are, where it's the type of thing, like, I don't really, people think I need to hear so much of a story to understand. And I wish people knew you're not that much of a snowflake. You're not that unique. Unfortunately, all the stuff we're dealing with really is, there's a method to the madness in understanding it. And once you really get the human psychology and the understanding of that, it becomes a lot easier to plug and play of, I know how you're thinking. I know how you're feeling because I've been there.
Yeah, it sounds like you can really empathize with people. You can put yourself in their shoes, understand how they're feeling. And like you said, plug and play, like, here's what you're doing. Also, I did this before, you know, we've all had these relationships where we look back and say, hindsight, now that's what I was doing there.
Of course, hindsight's 2020. And so people out there are like, how did you read my mind? How did you know? I'm like, because we're all very similar. And it's not to be a dick and be like, wow, you're not unique, but it's more to understand, hey, there is a community of us. You're not alone. This isn't something that just you deals with. There are people and there are ways to heal through it. It's not a death sentence. This isn't a, oh, I'm anxious or avoidant. Okay, well, that's it. I'm never going to get love. It's, oh, no. I thought that for a long time. Here are things that actually work. And here's actually things that'll move the needle. Not the clickbait that we see all the time of do this to get someone back. It's like, that's only going to keep you perpetuating the same cycle.
Yeah. And I like how you're coming at it from kind of a, you know, the psychology angle. You have a background in it, but you're applying it with like, you know, being a, I don't know what you're called now, millennial, Gen Z, but like you understand both worlds, because dating today, as we're going to talk about with these questions, is very different than it probably was for a lot of people trying it 20 years ago. So you almost need like a new set of tools and a coach that understands what it's like today.
Yeah, because realistically, like, even let's think about us, nobody ever taught me how to do this. No one ever growing up was like, hey, you know, what I had as a first example of a relationship was a narcissistic father and a people-pleasing mother who never set boundaries and would have my father leave us all the time. So, and cheat on her and all of those things. So it's like, I grew up with such a twisted way of what love was. And while I might not be a licensed therapist, I'm like, it's okay. I still understand psychology. I still understand human behavior. And I think what we now have is, yes, we have digital. So of course that's changing the game. But I think for everything negative of how dating is right now, of, oh, there's so many options. But what we also have are so many positives, because yeah, this is new. Back in the day when our parents were dating, of course they didn't have cell phones and things like that. But sometimes I wish they did, because then I don't think they would have married each other, because I don't think out of proximity and timing that they would have been in such a toxic, unhealthy relationship, because no one ever talked about what a narcissist was in the 90s. My mom was like, I didn't even know what that word really meant besides what the dictionary said. Versus now, we actually have the opportunity to connect with people that can satisfy our needs, and we can grow and we can evolve and we can adjust, and we can meet people that we may never have met because of proximity and timing. So for all of the negatives, there are positives. I think it's just about becoming a better buyer and understanding how to date versus, and like doing the work on ourselves versus what happened back in the day when people had to get married at 20 because you were shamed otherwise, or you were chastised by your family. We don't really have that as much these days.
Do you think people tend to like romanticize these older generations of relationships because they were together for 40 years and why can't people be like that today? But then the reality of it is maybe they hate each other and maybe like they shouldn't be together, like you said. So it's like we have this, oh, I wish things were like they used to be. But in reality, like, was it really that good?
100%. I'll give you an example. My grandmother had married the love of her life and he passed away from cancer. So she was single in the 50s as a woman. And she was like, it just wasn't allowed. Like, that was unheard of. So she kind of had to marry my grandfather. They were together until he passed away at 85. And she was then, of course, you know, single until she died at 100. And we could look at that going, oh my God, how beautiful. And it's like, she was never happy. She never truly loved him. She had to marry him because at the time, are you kidding me? Single with two kids at 1955 or 1953 when this happened, that was not a norm as it is now to be able to say, yeah, I'm single. I'm a woman. I can do whatever I want. I can be as a woman, be in my 30s and not have to have kids if I don't decide that that's something that works for me. So I think we've romanticized the fact that, oh, wow, look, they found one person. But my mama has been saying this since I was a kid. You don't have one soulmate. I don't believe that there's only one human out of 9 billion people on the planet. You can have soulmates for different parts of your life. You can have people for different parts of your life, because if you don't grow together, my sister's been married and with her husband since they were 18. They've been together 19 years. They've grown together. It's beautiful. But maybe in another 20 years, they don't. It's not a end all be all. And I think us checking in and saying, well, am I still satisfied? Do I still have the same needs? Because if I got married at 20 and now I'm 35, I have a completely different set of tools that I need and things that are happening for me in my life. So I don't want people to romanticize. And it's the same with like the twin flame. Did you see that documentary?
I didn't. Tell me.
It's a Netflix documentary. So I don't know if you're familiar with twin flames, but it's like this woo-woo, like I'm into astrology and all that stuff, but this is your person. It's your twin flame. They're the one that was sent to you by the gods. And realistically what it is, it's like, it's just keeping people in a really shitty situation, because then as you start to watch the documentary, you realize it's completely farce. It's totally full of shit. None of it was accurate. They were making this up. And so people will message me, well, what if this guy was my twin flame? Should I still stay? It's like, no, what you're doing is you're convincing yourself to stay in something that's not right for you, because you're giving it this like ethereal movement and understanding when I think people don't realize you can create a relationship with virtually almost anybody. It takes a lot less data points than we think it does to be compatible. It's really about how much are you willing to compromise? How much are they willing to compromise? And how much reality are you willing to take? Because if you want your Ryan Gosling male Adonis with, you know, who's a billionaire, but he's going to still be devoted and doting to you, let me know how that goes when you're still in your 50s, 60s, 70s trying to find that, because it's not realistic.
That's a great point. I always say, like, everybody's like, oh, if I could just meet a Brad Pitt. I'm like, and Brad Pitt might be gorgeous, but like, what if after a year you guys were a terrible match and you didn't get along at all? Like, again, we romanticize
it's very easy in the beginning, the idea of somebody, or they're great looking, or they're good in bed, or they're so charismatic, but that only lasts so long. Then you have to be in a relationship with them. And as you talk about in your videos, you really don't get that data until 3 months in, 6 months in, a year in. So it's this is not easy work, but I think knowledge is power here.
Because we need conflict and resolution. You know as well as I do, it's like to be in a healthy relationship, we don't just need, you know, people that, oh, well, we talk every day. It's like, oh, do you think that's a relationship? Is just constantly talking doesn't necessarily mean communicating. And I think that's the kind of, that's where you and I step in, of to be able to say, because I think that's something that I've become really accustomed to, is like the realities of being in a relationship. No, it's not fun and fancy, and it's not daisies and roses all the time. It's really tough. It's really hard. It's a lot of shadow work. It's a lot of taking accountability on yourself. And I think so many people want to say, no, it's them. No, it's just that they won't do what I need. And it's like, oh, okay, so it's all about you. So it's been an interesting dynamic.
Right. And as we'll see with divorce, a lot of these people, they really don't have any context of what a good relationship is, or like you said before, if their only relationship was their parents that they saw growing up, it's like, we've only seen maybe two or three relationships. They might not have been that healthy. So of course we don't know what the hell we're doing.
No, because if you see having a need as conflict, that's why people please. Oh, I don't want to say anything because if I say something, I'm going to rock the boat. Well, yeah. So if you grew up where every time your mom even made something, your father freaked out, or vice versa, one of your parents lost it or was always upset when you had emotions, then of course, when you become an adult, that's going to be really uncomfortable because you've ever learned, your nervous system was created around that. So to keep you safe, it's, hey, stay quiet, stay down. But what people need to realize is you're not dating your mom or dad. This is not, you're not being abandoned as an adult. This is just some schmo you might've met on the internet. So it's a different, we pretty much have to unlearn everything we learned in childhood and relearn it as an adult, because otherwise you're going to continue to react from that childhood place as opposed to respond like an adult.
Let me ask you, this is a theory I have that, you know, you could debunk. Do you think in some ways, if you're listening to these podcasts, consuming all of this, you know, education on Instagram, do we know too much? Does that make dating harder in some ways?
So here's the issue. What's happening is that you're intellectualizing, but you're not actually implementing. So think of it this way. I could give you every book about going to the gym and doing a deadlift and say, here's how you bodybuild and here's how you're going to get all this. You have to eat this. You have to do this. You have to do this. You could cognitively know everything, but if you don't implement that, you're not going to get stronger. If you just know about it, but if I send you to the gym and say, okay, now deadlift, you might not even be able to pull the bar up because your body doesn't understand, but your brain does. So it's the same with healing. Yes, of course, self-awareness and intellectualizing and understanding intellectually what's happening, huge. But if you're not in your body and feeling things and you're just constantly trying to think your way out of things, that's where you'll always be in a loop because emotions aren't logical. So when we're trying to assess logic to it, but we have an emotion or a feeling, that's where you get this constant going in a circle of a battle or self-blame or shame. Because yeah, I could listen to every podcast in the world on how to be a brain surgeon, but until I actually get in there and do it, I just learned about it, but I didn't actually implement it.
Right. And the hard part is the only way to really get that experience is to date, to get into relationships, and they're probably going to end and cause you pain, which we want to avoid. So it's like, I know all these things, I know what I want, but the only way to get it is to suffer a little and to learn.
Right. And it sucks, but it's like the same with the gym. I have to literally break my muscle at the gym for it to rebuild stronger. Yikes, that sounds terrifying. But I know I also have the tools I need. I have my protein. I've got my supplements. I've got a trainer. I've got the right form. Those are my tools so that the pain hurts a little less. But I have to go through pain and hurt to build a stronger body. Otherwise, you're just a little flub. So if you're so terrified, because oftentimes what happens, especially with anxious folks, we're so scared of the feeling, not actually the outcome. So it's like that person leaving, okay, sure, it's dating, right? But we're so scared of the feeling that's going to come because that brings us back to childhood when our parents used to leave or when we got abandoned. And so I think that's why I say, if you can actually get into your body, face these feelings and start to actually allow them to take space, oh my God, all of a sudden dating goes from being terrifying and scary to what's next? What else do you have for me? What else can I learn about myself? How else can I level up? How else can I grow and implement things that I've learned? Because you then start to realize, wait a minute, it's a lot less personal. me having a boundary and this person walking away doesn't mean there's anything wrong with me. Oh, wait, that's just because I'm in touch with myself and that person wasn't picking up what I'm putting down.
Bring it on. Yes. And when you're divorced too, this is like your practice, your training ground. It's like you're thrown into the wolves. And for the first time, you're going to be maybe exercising a boundary, enforcing it, feeling it pushed back against and rejecting people, getting rejected. So it's not easy, but it's like, it is a great opportunity to learn about yourself.
Because you can't date without being triggered. It's just not a reality. I think that's the number one is like, I don't want to be triggered. It's like, well, then that's why most people, like I had a client I was talking to and she's like, when I'm single, I'm great. I'm super involved. Like, I do everything I need to do for myself and I take care of myself. The second I date, and I'm like, you self-abandon because your boundaries are good when you're alone because you're not being triggered by somebody else. You're not being brought back. Our relationships, our romantic relationships are the closest mimic to our caregivers. So that's why, oh, well, in work, I'm fine. And in every other aspect of life, I'm fine. It's like, yeah, but because those aren't hitting that really deep open wound that's gushing right now. Because if you had a huge cut on your hand and I kept poking it, it's going to hurt, right? Until you say, hey, I need to wrap this. I need to heal it. And then we can, because then when you start to go, doesn't trigger you as much anymore. And I think that's the double-edged sword of stay single while you find yourself and while you're like, hey, I just got divorced. Okay, listen, it's not the time to jump out and start dating. That's escapism and that's you not actually facing what's coming up for you. But the time to start dating after a divorce or after being single, whatever, after a breakup or is when you realize rejection's a lot less personal. That dating implies you're going to have to say no to people and you're going to have, it's not going to work out because the apps are an inorganic amount of people in one day that you're meeting that find you attractive or a mutual attraction. I've tried doing no apps, especially when I lived in New York, major city. I remember once I was like, I met two people the entire month and we didn't even have a date. I'm just talking two guys I met versus being on the app and I have 40 guys in a night that I could go out with. They can't all work out. So I think it's also like expectation management and really just saying, okay, I might be having to climb that mountain again and it's fucking daunting, but if I have the right tools, that climb is a lot more enjoyable than me standing there with nothing saying, now what? That's why you're always falling and getting hurt because you don't have what you actually need.
This is like a therapy session for me. I love it. Let's let's dive right in. We asked on Instagram for some questions and we got quite a few. So let's do a little rapid fire things I've seen let's you go. Talk about. Question number one, how do you get over the trauma bond?
So a trauma bond, I mean, listen, the reality is that is something working with a therapist or somebody that is really experienced because a trauma bond is a bond that typically happens between a narcissist or an abuser and their abusee. So as the victim of a trauma bond, what happens is we go through a phase. So it comes on with total admiration and affection. That's why the love bombing phase, this person gets you to trust them implicitly. Look how much they love me. Then we move to the next phase of degrading. Then they start to gaslight. Then they start to manipulate. Then the true colors of that manipulation and that control come out. But because we've established such a security with them, that's where gaslighting starts to work. Because if you don't have a strong sense of self and you're going, oh my God, did I say that? Oh, wow. Okay. That's my fault. Then all of a sudden you start to question your own reality. And the reason a trauma bond starts to take effect is because it vacillates between the two. You go from somebody that when you have conflict and when they do it, but then they come back, but look how much I love you. I do this because I'm there for you. So you're going, this person cares so much about me as if it's your caregiver, right? If your parents said something, you'd say, of course I trust them. That's my mom and dad. They love me. This isn't your mother or father. So if you're somebody that had a trauma bond, we have so much to unpack besides the bond. We have, do you trust yourself? Do you know what a gut reaction even feels like? Or do you understand what the anxiety feels like? Do you know what was happening in your body? Are you aware of the thoughts that were coming up? Were you ever even able to set a boundary with this person? What was your reality versus what happened in the situation? Trauma bonds are, I was in one. I was married to a narcissist and I thought I was the worst person in the entire planet. And I thought I was just the raging piece of shit. And when we broke up, I was the end of it. And what I needed to do was assess my part in it because we also have a part. You're not always the victim here. And so if you're coming out of it, it's understanding, wow, I had such low self-esteem that this person coming on strong to me, that's what I wanted so bad. I wanted someone to choose me because I see myself so low that them validating me made me feel valid. And then it's taking the space, it's seeing the situation, not idealizing that person any longer and going, wait, this person hurt me. This person manipulated me. This person gaslit me, and I allowed it. I allowed it because I didn't know any better. There's an aspect of accountability, self-awareness, and also self-trust that comes into moving on from a trauma bond.
And it sounds like just that familiarity with it will actually be attractive to us in a weird way. We know we shouldn't be, but it just feels like home. So we end up in these relationships again. But I guess the exercise is have awareness. This is not healthy. Let me get out of this before it turns into a marriage.
Boundaries. Boundaries are going to be, because people that are trauma narcissists do not do well with boundaries. That's why the minute, has anyone ever noticed that somebody that love bombs you and comes on really strong, and then the minute something changes, when you call them out and say, hey, what's going on? You try to set a boundary. All of a sudden they discard you. You know what? I'm not ready for a relationship. I've realized that. Instead of saying, hey, you're right. I came on strong. That was me sending mixed messages. I did. I came on and I did all this. No, there's no accountability. It's, you know what? They discard. I'm done with you. Because if they get found out, oh, no. There's nothing. Instead, it's you. It's your problem. So setting boundaries and holding those boundaries, being in touch with yourself, knowing what, and I get it. If you only know anxiety, listening to yourself is going to be tough. But that's where working with a therapist or a coach or somebody that can help you to say, hey, no, that's valid. These are valid thoughts, to teach you what does healthy dating actually look like, so that when you feel it, I had a client, the same thing. She got love bombed, saying it was a typical of this situation. And she was so confused. And then when we unpacked it, she was like, holy shit, I now see every step along the way where I needed to start setting boundaries. If you look and you start asking questions and you really listen to what somebody says, trust me, they'll divulge everything about themselves without even realizing it.
Yeah, it's like you're data seeking. It's like, you don't want to hear that. It's going to feel bad, but you're like, good to know. I know what this, now I know what a red flag is. And now hopefully I'll, you know, give it a chance, or I'll learn to escape this quickly. So that's a good lesson. That's hard to do on your own. So I think like a coach, a podcast, even Instagram clips, you start to like learn these new skills.
Totally.
Next question here. This is a big one. Where do you start on the apps? Last time I dated, they didn't even exist.
So with the apps, where we start is managing expectations, because it's going to be like a kid in a candy store. You're going to get on and be like, oh my God. It's like walking into, I don't know if anyone ever lived in Venice, when you go to Gold's Gym and you're like, so this is where everybody is. It's like the hot pot of all these beautiful people. And you're like, I'm a kid in a candy store. And then 6 months later, you realize, oh, this is all going to cause me toothaches. Got it. Cool. Got it. So I think when we're starting with the apps, it's important to understand how to set up a profile, first of all. I see my partner, tech guy, and I, we do dating app audits. And so people will send in their profiles. And the number one issue we see are either terrible photos, photos that don't accurately depict who you are, tons of selfies, lots of angles, not really showing you, or a lot of thirst traps where you're like, wow, that's a lot of shirtless photos. Or I see prompts that don't elicit a fodder. So let me ask you, if you have a fucking prompt on an app and it says three of my favorite emojis, what conversation are you going to start from that? How is that giving me any information about you? Biggest risk I've taken, joining this app. Wow. Cool. So that's your risk, is joining this app. It's nothing that's going to evoke a conversation. I don't know anything about you. I'm not learning anything about you. There's nothing on there. So I think if you're completely new to the apps, become a better buyer. Know and understand there's a lot of catfish. There's bots. There are going to be people that are taking advantage of you. If you're very clear on what it is that you want, then you say, you match with somebody, you talk for a day. Hey, I'd love to meet. Get off the app and into real life. The app is just a meeting vehicle. The app is not a relationship builder. That has got to be the thing. Get off the apps quick and get into real life. FaceTime, I don't care. Do something to where you can have a conversation with this person. Don't over-romanticize people. Don't attach to the outcome. I get it. That person might be really attractive and have a cool job and you sent one message. That doesn't mean it's your husband, so you need to get the fuck over it. And make sure that your profile is actually eliciting a conversation starter, and not just a conversation starter because how hot you look or how great your body looks in a swimsuit. It's because, like, my rule when I had the apps, any guy that started a conversation with me on my looks, I didn't answer. That was it. Because it was I had so much else to talk about. And my partner, when he messaged me the first time, it was all about my prompt. And he gave a full paragraph. We talked for about an hour on the app. He went right into, let me get your number. Let's go out. He made our plan. One date turned into two dates. It was just super consistent. And he showed up the same. We didn't text every day. We didn't have a lot of over romanticizing. It took us 4 months to decide to be 5 months to decide to be in a relationship. We went slow, but we also understood the priority was we both wanted a relationship. So I think that's just something to understand when you're dating on the apps. Not everybody wants the same things as you.
And lower your expectations. I think when you come into it, it's almost, it sounds like you're almost handing somebody the keys to a Ferrari and saying, okay, go off, drive it. You don't know how to drive stick. You've never driven a minivan for the last 10 years, but have fun. It's a little scary.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a look at the next question here. When is the right time to get attached to the person after you start dating them?
Well, this is my issue. You should never be attached to people. There's no reason. You can have a connection with people and have a bond. An attachment is attaching to somebody. That's not healthy. You attach as a child to your caregivers. That's how you learn attachment. But there is never a time to attach to somebody you're dating. That's going to be because if you attach to them, you're now saying, I have to have them in my life because otherwise I'm not going to be okay. Then you overlook red flags. You can build a connection with somebody. I don't want you to build attachments with people.
That's a good idea because you can, especially with the apps and texting, I think you can create like a artificial attachment where it isn't real. Like so much communication now is being done on the apps, on text. So it almost like accelerates things when in real life, maybe you've met this person three times and you know, you've had drinks with them. You don't know who this person is.
You have no idea who they are and you're creating a false sense of intimacy. You're creating a tone. You're creating a version of them. I can't tell you how many times, like I met one dude and he was like a big business owner, like had a company that was all around. I created this entire like fantasy about us. I looked him up. I heard all these videos about him. When we had the date, when I say no chemistry or connection, none. I forced myself because I had created this entire fantasy because to me, I got my validation in him choosing me. Look, he's this big, well-to-do guy. Even though on the date, I didn't really like him. I thought he was boring. He was shorter than me, which is like, I'm already kind of like, oh, okay, I'm a taller girl. It was just a turn off to me, but I still was enamored because I created a version of him. I didn't actually get to know this person for who he was. Instead, it was, oh, you're cool. If you pick me, I'm cool.
Good lesson. All right. Next question here. This sounds like more of a breakup or divorce question. Tried going no contact, but it's so hard. Help.
When it comes to no contact, we got to remember, I don't normally love the why questions, but you got to remember your why. Yeah, no shit, it's hard because you had this person in your life every day and you told your nervous system you're only safe if you have them. So now that you don't have them, it's a panic. This is what I mean by you attach to people. When you attach to the outcome, it has to work. Then if it doesn't, there's no room for anything else. That's it. My life is over. It's hell in a handbasket. I have to have them. I have to have them. When on the contrary, what's actually happening is that little you inside of you, that little inner child, she wants you, not them. You self-abandoning because, oh, no contact is so hard. You know what's also really hard? Not eating McDonald's every day. Going by my favorite cupcake shop and going, But you know what? I also know my why. Well, I don't want diabetes. I don't want to be overweight. I don't want to be unhealthy. I have to have self-restraint. Eventually, this is what I notice. When it comes to dating, people revert back to being a child. You got to be a fucking adult. No contact is so hard. No shit, it's hard. You cared about this person and now they're no longer in your life. But if you remember your why, well, wait a minute. I don't want somebody in my life I have to convince. I want somebody in my life that chooses me. This person wasn't able to satisfy my needs it didn't work. There's a reason you broke up. You didn't just break up because everything was incredible. So if you're thinking of future you, which is my favorite DBT practice, DBT is dialectic, whatever, right? Behavioral therapy. Think of future you. If you always think of future you, wait a minute. If I text this person and they don't give me the response I want, I'm going to feel like shit, right? Or even if I had them in my life, I never really felt fulfilled. I always felt like I needed to prove myself. What does that tell me? I need me. Not, I don't need them. I need me. I need to start doing that inner work. I need to start healing that shit because I've got no contact with almost every guy I've ever dated. Yeah, it sucks. I can admit that. I can hold two truths. We can have two conflicting thoughts. It can feel like shit and be hard, but I can also know that this person isn't for me and this is what's necessary. So yeah, eventually we got to just pony the fuck up and be an adult.
Right. And I will say it's a lot harder today because now we have social media. You used to not really know what somebody was doing every day if they didn't, you know, they lived further away from you. And now all it takes is one little click and you can see their pictures and how happy they are. So I always advise, or I was taught, unfollow your ex, block your ex-wife, even if you're amicable, like, because it's a tough thing to see all the time and then even be triggered. So like just set these kind of constraints that make it a little easier for you to heal.
Set boundaries around it. Mute people. Like, I think that's, again, you have it just as much power. It's not always, because I get this question every day. How do I get someone to come back to me? And I'm like, How about you love yourself more than the need for them to love you? Maybe we start there. Because if you're so focused on them loving you, it shows me you don't give a fuck about yourself. You're so focused on other people validating you, you don't even look at yourself. Let's start there.
This is easier said than done, but it's something that I think, like you've said before, we've never done before. So it's like the first time when you say work on yourself, you might think back and say, I don't think I've ever really done that. Now I'm doing it for the first time.
It's really hard. But again, it was really hard when I started the gym. I knew I wanted a bigger butt and I knew I wanted a six pack. It was hard. I was a pack a day smoker. I was on medication. I ate like a 6-year-old let loose in a grocery store. I was 40 pounds heavier. Yeah, it fucking sucked. But every day I showed up for myself and every day I got stronger and every day. That's why when people now, oh my God, well, see, you're just genetically that way. And it's like, don't discredit how much hard work I've put into this because you don't want to do it. That's a different story. But we are all capable of healing through this, but that comes with, do you want to stay in the shit you're used to? Then fine. Good luck, Godspeed, enjoy the puddle that you're in. But if you actually want to have a better life and say, it's time, then yeah, it's time to do the hard work. That's why most people don't want to do the work, is because it's easier to stay where they're at.
That's good. All right. One of the services that you do offer, dating app review pictures, you kind of mentioned it before. We're going to try something here. We had a couple people submit their profiles.
Sweet.
And I'm going to share my screen and we can do like a Sabrina 15 second overview. Let's see if you can see.
Perfect. Put me in the game, coach.
Here.
Yes.
All right. So we have our first profile here and I'll read a message about one of the frustrations that she was having.
Okay.
I felt that my age, 46, may be one of the reasons I don't get dates. Men seem to want to date younger women. This is hard because I'm 46. Most people don't think I look my age. But in dating apps, men just kind of skip over me because maybe there's a filter. Maybe they think I'm too old for them. So I guess some thoughts on that. And maybe I'll do a quick rundown of the pictures and the prompts and see if there's anything you can tell me when to pause here.
The reality is there's a couple of things. I hear men do this all the time. Girls just want a younger guy. And it's like, we cannot change the fact that you're 46. I cannot change that. Stop trying to start things inauthentically. If you're not getting matches because you're 46, then that's the fucking reality of it. So don't put, oh, well, I'm 36. Oh, just kidding. I'm actually 46. That's being disingenuous. So I'm glad that she's being honest. I understand it fucking sucks. But that doesn't mean that there's no one for you. That just means maybe specifically Bumble might not be the place. Off the bat with the photos, she's beautiful. I see too many selfies. It's all too many. So there's actually been a study that shows when you take photos, when the crown matches the chin, so straight on shows confidence, up at angle shows insecurity. There's been a ton of studies on this. And so that's why, like when my partner, when we matched, the photo of him was straight on, him smiling. And I was like instantly gravitated. Notice how all of hers are angles. So it's showing that there's something that we're not being honest about. Whether that's, and then the one full body, you're at an angle. So I actually don't even know what your body looks like. And I can't even really see who you are. So my suggestion here would be diversify the photos. 3 selfies, too many. Show me one with you and your girlfriends out to brunch, having a great time. Show me something of you doing an activity, not in the middle of the street, making a move. That's cute if you want to have that as like a nice to have photo. But if this is all that we're dealing with, then they're kind of looking, being like, next. You have to remember how many people. So show the best parts of yourself. If you only have headshots, show a full body because you can't hide that. I don't want to hear, well, but I'm not comfortable in my skin. Well, then we shouldn't be on the apps now, are we? We have to show up authentically as ourselves. Otherwise, it's never going to work.
I wonder that. Do you recommend people always show a full body picture?
Personally, yes. Because I hear it so often. And then because what happens is the women that don't, they go on the date and then they're like, but he was great until I showed up. And then and it's like, well, yeah, because you weren't authentic. If somebody is not into somebody who's like, let's say for me, if somebody wasn't into like tall or thin girls and they wanted somebody that's a little thicker, which there are plenty of people that do. If I didn't show that and I showed up, the guy's like, oh, okay, well, but that's not what I'm interested in. I didn't know this. We can't get upset with people because then they see who you are and all of a sudden that they have an opinion on it. You know, like, yeah, that might be shallow to you, but to them, it might not be. To them, it might be, I'm not attracted to you. I don't know what else you want from me. Show who you are. Step with confidence. I mean, even like even her prompts, my current obsession is plants. Okay, what is that? That doesn't give me anything. Cool. Mm-hmm. I have plants too. Can you go abbreviate? Can you elaborate? I mean,
What would be a good example of a better answer to the prompts? I know the prompts can be tricky.
The prompts can be tricky. So I'll give you what I had used on mine just for personal. My first one was, you should go out with me if, and it was very deep. It was like, you're growth minded and driven by growth or whatever the fuck it was. I can't remember. It's been a year now. You know, I'm not interested in a casual fling or anything. Like, I'm not interested in anything casual. I'm not saying we have to get married tomorrow, but I definitely want a mutual fuck yes and more intentional with the way that I date. That was to show meat and potatoes. Then I had a sign of a great first date. It actually happens. Effort equals interest. I'm new from New York. Go easy on me. Can't tell you how many people were like, all right, let's make it happen. Because I was coming up with, let's do it. I don't want to be a pen pal. Then I had my one thing you should know about me is I eat dinner to get to dessert and snacks are a must. What's in the cabinet to make sure we're on the same page? So I allowed men to be like, oh my God, okay, talk to me. Have you been to this dessert place? Okay, have you tried this snack? I gave things for people to have a conversation with. Not my current obsession is plants. Cool. How many do you have? You know what I mean? Right. Like, what kind do you have? I don't fucking care. If you don't know plants, you're not going to do anything about it.
And I imagine those are the profiles that you were more attracted to, were ones with more detailed, more specific, more let you hit the ball back, not, hey, I like going to the gym. I like fishing.
Exactly. Because when it's so basic and simple and minimalist, then I kind of go, oh, do I only like this person because they're attractive? Well, then there's not enough for me to go out with them because there's no depth here.
Yeah. In some ways, I think you can even get an idea of like, you know, I can get a read on somebody. Is this the effort that they're going to put in? You know, you see a picture, even if they're not attractive, if the picture is all blurry, you're like, you thought that was the best first picture to put up of you. Like, what do you think about yourself? Like, all these things are kind of like these indicators that we're going to, like you said, very quickly make a decision. So, you know, put your best foot forward. All right. That was very helpful.
This is what I mean by being a better buyer. We have to be better buyers because if I go on a profile, I used to see those guys not on here very often. I'm like, so then you're not intentional. You're not genuinely intentional about dating. This is a pastime for you so you could get followers. Next.
All right. Let's do one more before we go.
Cool.
Dating app number two. Looks like this is a different app.
It's Hinge. And so again, two photos. Can't see your face. Perfect. We have also Bumble. Kind of same thing. How does that main thing, same thing here. She's beautiful, can barely see her face. I can see she's got a banging body, but I can't see her face. So I'm seeing a lack of confidence. We have the hat with the glasses. We've got you putting your phone over your face. I'm starting to know, okay, there's a bit of an insecurity here. Same with, okay, here. Okay, cute. We have the dog photo. Love that. Same thing here. Okay, I can't really see. Oh, jump roping doesn't do anything. Horseback riding. Okay. Again, it's, so like even here, green flags, confidence, not cocky, fun, easygoing, getting to the point. What do you want? How do you want to say, hey, I'm fun and I'm not cocky. So everybody's so focused on, you should go, like even her first thing was, you know, going out, if you have humor and you have this, do you really think people are that self-aware to be like, I'm a confident man with humor? No, it's like, I don't, nothing here. So here, not be straightforward, communicate, show confidence and humor. I don't know anything about this woman. I only know that she's dated people that have wasted her time because everything she's so focused on is be this, be this, be this. You're not telling me everything about you. What you're telling me is I've been hurt a lot. I've gotten a lot of bullshit. I'm not willing to put up with it. Here are my boundaries. Okay, but I don't know who you are.
Yeah, you do see that a lot. So use this space to talk about yourself. And the other thing I see a lot is a lot of no cheaters. Like you could just feel the negativity. Like you've been burned. Do I want to into a situation like this? So, you know, you don't have to be like, you know, the most positive person. You can be sarcastic, you can be witty, but I guess it's interesting to hear it from a woman's point of view, you know, looking at another profile and seeing where it can be improved.
Cause like I see it here. It's even like, I love, you know, about me, outgoing, friendly, educated, easygoing, all of this. And I'm like, you are just using a bunch of words. This is a dictionary. You just went on and got a bunch of synonyms to describe something. How about I like looking for a long-term relationship? No kids, never been married. Fine with that. That's okay. You could put that at the bottom. I'm okay with what you're actually looking for. Kind, positive, and of cheerful personality. Again, all you're giving me are synonyms over and over. I'm this, I'm this, I'm this. How about I love physical fitness is huge for me. I'm big on the outdoors. I love to cook. I love to go on a hike club. You know, things like that. Give me what the fuck is about you? Who are you? Not just that you're kind and you're compassionate, so you're a golden retriever? You know what I mean? It's like, again, there's no depth. Everything is shallow. And we want, if you want a partnership of depth, then you've got to put yourself out there. That's why I did. And what did I get? One of the most incredible partners I've ever had who's incredibly deep, because I didn't bullshit. I put it on my profile and I asked those questions on the first date. I got in there because I wanted to gauge, does this person have the bandwidth? And he did.
Wow. This is, and again, like, this is something, I think a lot of people are doing this for the first time. This takes a little work. This takes a little time. You do probably want to show it to a girlfriend, a guy friend, a coach, because we're not used to writing about ourselves in this context.
Totally. That's the thing. I know that a lot of this comes from inexperience, but that's where we come in. If that's where sometimes I'm so harsh and direct, because I'm like, I don't need to sugarcoat this. I don't need to tell you, oh my God, you're doing such a good job, sweetie. It's like, no, here's what you need to fix. Go fucking do it and go be happy. You deserve love. You deserve the partner that's right for you. Let us help you get there, but we got to drop ego and defensiveness. Like, if your friends are, if you show a bunch of your guy friends and they're giving you feedback, don't do the, well, you know, it's been working for me. It's fine. It's like, it's okay to admit, okay, yeah, you're right. I think I need to upgrade. And have your friends take photos of you. Trust me when I say, especially single guys, if you tell your girlfriends, hey, I'm trying to get back out there to date, can you help me get photos? You've got a new paparazzi that's going to now be taking photos of you. Go out to brunch with your friend and say, hey, can you grab a couple of candid shots of me just smiling, having a good time? I need it for my profile.
That's good. And one thing I'll say, as a divorced person, a co-parent, our time is scarcer than ever. So I appreciate that, like, you're going to give you the critical feedback, because you don't want people wasting time. We don't have time to go on shitty dates, you know, three times a week anymore. We want to make it count. So I appreciate that you're coming at it from that angle. You want to get your clients to the, you know, end result that they're looking for.
Time is the only finite resource we have, and we have to treat it as such, because I'm not going to get these years back. You're not going to get this time with your kids back, all of those things. And if we spend, you know, 4 months talking to somebody online and getting enamored, you're taking away your energy from your child. You're taking the energy away from yourself. You're taking the energy away from meeting that person. So if you're, especially as a single parent, I see people all the time write in, the guy I met, we've been dating for a month. He met my kids. And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? What are you doing? Stop subjugating your children to your hot mess of a dating life. Step up and be there for your children as well as yourself. Because you have to not only be there for you, but you also have to be there for your kids. If you are post-divorce or dating with children, as a child of divorce, who I had one parent that was and one parent that wasn't, it leaves a mark on them. Trust me, I can say that.
Sabrina, this was fantastic. Let people know where they can find you, where they can listen to you, and how they can work with you.
Thanks, Rob. So Sabrina.Zohar on TikTok and Instagram, or Do the Work Podcast on Insta, Do the Work Podcast on Spotify, Apple, all the fun stuff. And yeah, if you want to work with me, it's the same link in every bio. You can either book one-on-one, ask a question, or just get some free resources. So it's all in there.
Sabrina, thank you so much for being on today.
Thanks, Rob. I appreciate it.
It comes as no surprise that not all divorces are created equal. While some divorces are collaborative and amicable, others are painful, accusatory, and may simply have you thinking, what the F? If you're co-parenting with an ex-spouse who abuses alcohol, this is a sobering reality. The folks at SoberLink want to help. SoberLink's alcohol monitoring system is the most convenient, reliable, and reasonable way for a parent to provide evidence that they are not drinking during parenting time. The system's real-time alerts, facial recognition, and tamper detection ensure the integrity of each test, so you can be confident that your kids are with a sober parent. With SoberLink, judges rest assured that your child is safe, attorneys get court-admissible evidence of sobriety, and both parents have empowerment and peace of mind. The WTF divorce community is here to help shed light on the fact that whatever you're going through, you are not alone. If SoberLink is reaching you at the exact time that you need it, visit www.soberlink.com/WTF to sign up and get $50 off your device. That's www.soberlink.com/WTF.